This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios on the corner of Trashview and Nada Vista. Please put on your 3D glasses now. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This keeps your brain at a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. And it's working. I can feel it. Can you feel it, Jeremy?
Yeah, I feel something way down in my bean bone.
As always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. This allows reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. To learn more about this, go to BIPCOT.org.
Yeehaw. All right. All right.
So how are you doing, Jeremy?
I am good, Shane. We are here. We are the Freedom Fiends. We have returned again. And tonight, it's just going to be a two-man show because when the head hamster is away, the worms are going to play. So it's, I'm Jeremy. It's Shane. That's Shane. It's just going to be the Hello. Two of us tonight. And Michael took the night off. He's busy getting ready for working on that new book he mentioned the other night. The 4.5 rules to life? Was that the title he was talking
four
about?
Four and a half. I'm curious what the half of a rule is going to be.
You know what? I think he actually told me, and I forgot already because my mind is obviously, I've been kind of busy with my life in the past couple of months. So I think he did tell me at one point, but I've kind of forgot. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I do like Michael's writing.
So do I. I'm actually, I listened to the user's manual for the human experience. I really enjoyed it. It's very good. I recommend people listen to it.
Yeah, I listened to it at one point. I planned on actually reading it because a lot of times when I listen to audiobooks, I don't necessarily get everything. And because I'm easily distracted because I'm so used to listening to the podcasts where, you know, I'll miss a sentence or two because I'm busy doing something else, but my headphones are always on. And unfortunately, with audiobooks, I'm like that too.
Yeah. It's just got to the point now where reading anything in text is hard for me to do, and I like to be able to multitask. So anything in audio format is perfect for me.
Yeah, me too. That's why I went that way. It's just I find with books, like I've been trying. Well, although granted, it's a much more difficult book to not pay attention to, I guess. But I've been working on finally getting through Stirner's the Ego and His Own. Or what's the new title on the new translation? The Unique and His Property or Its Property?
Oh, The Unique. Yeah, I saw that.
His Property.
Day.
Yeah.
So that's James. The same book.
Yes, it's just the newest translation of. Before I bury the lead any further, Max Stirner, the German philosopher from what is it, the early 18th century, right?
For any of those who don't know, the egoist and individualist philosopher.
Yes. We have talked about recently. James Weeks was actually talking about it on multiple shows, and Michael was yelling at him about not explaining what spooks were, I think I recall. we're discussing, and they put out a new edition of that book, was just a new translation was just put out recently, and with James, our co-host James Weeks, had a picture on his Facebook page about with him proudly holding it next to his face. And yeah, the new translation reads The Unique and Its Property, so it's pretty interesting. But I've been trying to get through that on audiobook, which is, you know, it's not exactly a light read. So you can't just listen to it in passing, and it doesn't help that I got it from LibriVox. I don't know if you've ever used that app.
No, I haven't.
It's a free, you know, they house a lot of free audiobooks, but they're all people who aren't getting paid to read the books. So they're all just like, you know, basically fan submissions. So the audio quality is not always the best. The guy who does the Ego and His Own on the LibriVox apps, he actually has pretty pleasant speaking voice to listen to, but he was not careful at all about his surrounding environment because there's different sounds that kick in at different points. Like you could tell when it's either his heater or his air conditioner is kicking on and off. Like you hear it like very violently. and stuff like that. But I'm trying to get through that. It just, it's slogging. I still only got 2/3 of the way through it. I still can't get all the way through it because it's so hard to actually focus on it. That, like we were talking about before the show, that's why I have such a hard time with audiobooks. That's why I listen to more podcasts, because it's, you know, there's more breaks, you know, there's changes of subject and stuff like that, or breaks, you know, on, if you listen to like different podcasts that have commercials in them and stuff like that. So there's stuff that cuts it up. So it's not like I don't have to like focus.
I guess I'm used to just listening to things like, you know, like our show and other podcasts that can be an hour or more in length. And I'll just pause it when I'm in the middle of something else and come back to it. And usually I remember where I left off, but a lot of times I'll have to backtrack a little to remember where I was at.
Yeah, I can pause it. Unfortunately, a lot of the times it happens when I'm out walking with the dogs and stuff. And if I have at least two dogs on each arm, you know, it's actually kind of hard for me to get to the button to shut the darn thing off. So there's so many times that I have to wait till I actually get to a point where I can stop. Like if one of them decides to go to the bathroom, we actually stop moving, and then I'm like switching hands and then trying to quickly, you know, go backwards and stuff. And with a book, it's so much harder for me to do. So one of these days I'll finish it. But yeah, that's why I haven't re-listened to Michael's book, that one, the Handbook for the... Was it?
Yeah.
The User's Manual for the Human Experience. Yeah. Thank you. I'm horrible with book titles.
Yeah.
But any hoodle. What else did I want to say? Oh, this is another thing I'm fascinated by. I fascinate myself sometimes. I have recently found an obsession with seltzer water, which I never liked before. Do you like seltzer water? Do you drink seltzer water?
I never have liked it, no.
Yeah, I never did either. I remember my dad drinking it all the time when I was growing up. Usually, I think Vintage was the brand. But he always had it around. And I remember every time I tried it, because I wanted to be like him, I was just always like miserable with the experience. I just always remember going, wanting to be so much like my dad. And every time I picked it up, I would taste it. I'm like, nope, not yet. Still not doing it for me. And I've had bouts over my life with dealing with soda issues, where I just can't stop drinking soda. And I just, you know, obviously the older I get, the worse that is for me, because I just put on so much weight. And it doesn't help that they finally brought Mexican Coke back and allowed it in the States, and it's popping up in gas stations everywhere. That's another thing. If you haven't had the Coca-Cola from Mexico, you should really try it, because it reminds me of my youth, what like soda used to taste like before they started putting high fructose corn syrup and everything.
Right.
But anyway, in trying to get away from my soda addiction, because nothing else seems, I like the sweetness of the soda, obviously. But it's really the carbonation thing that gets me, because I've tried other drinks with sweeter, you know, different sweet drinks and stuff like that, and nothing does it for me the way soda does, because I like the carbonation. And I can't drink energy drinks because I get too obsessed with those things and how I haven't killed myself. I think there was actually like an intervention for me last year, because at one point I was doing like two, at least two, sometimes three, and other times four shows a week here, plus all the other shows I was doing. I was living on Monster. I think I was drinking like at least four of those giant cans a day.
Wow.
Yeah, it's horrible.
It's a lot of sugar, but it's also a lot of caffeine, and caffeine is the reason that I drink soda.
Yeah, well, the caffeine helps too, but I drink coffee. I drink enough coffee that I don't need the soda for that. It's just I really like the taste. But I recently decided to try, because I heard our former co-host, Jim Jesus, keep talking about the fact that they had brought New York Seltzer back. And I remember hearing about New York Seltzer when I was a kid, but I don't ever remember having it around, because like I said, my dad always drank Vintage. But I walked into the 7-Eleven one day, and there it was, this Hal's New York Seltzer sitting on the shelf, and I was like, ooh, it comes in flavors? All right, I'll try this. And I was like hooked instantly, and now I can't stop drinking these things. And I was so excited today when I went into the 7-Eleven, the closest 7-Eleven to me, which actually doesn't always carry this stuff, unfortunately, because they don't have a lot of cooler space compared to some of the other stores. And I guess they didn't want to rearrange things for the new entries, because this stuff literally only started being put on the shelves a few months ago, from what I can recall. But so they'll only have like one little sleeve that's holding it. So every day there's either nothing there, or they'll rotate the flavors that they have. So I don't get to pick and choose. But they had this new one today, watermelon. this stuff is ridiculously good. I don't know why I haven't been drinking this before then. And I don't have the urge for soda anymore because I'm getting my carbonation. And it's
so you're saying that you're drinking watermelon flavored seltzer water and it's replacing your cravings for soda.
Yes. Yes. Well, watermelon is just today. I just found this today. It actually says on the bottle limited edition because I haven't seen the watermelon before. Normally I drink the black cherry one, or the, I think it's French vanilla, or vanilla cream. One of those two. If I can find that one, that's usually my second favorite. This is
so
a brand
does it
new
taste
one.
Like actual vanilla or actual watermelon?
No, you know, because it's supposedly just like natural flavoring. Like there's nothing in it. Like even the ingredients are just like water and natural flavors. It tastes like seltzer water with just this like almost aftertaste of whatever fruit's in there. Not very strong, just enough to let you know that it's there and make it taste different than plain seltzer. And it's just, I don't know, it's amazing. So I'll allow myself one or two, like, well, I'm trying to cut down to one. I've been doing two. But I keep saying I'm going to allow myself just one of those Mexican Coca-Colas a week. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I have knocked out all other soda because I was obsessed with, even though most people think I'm insane because they think it's disgusting, vanilla Coke I actually like a lot.
Oh, dude, I used to love that stuff.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I've actually kicked soda for a while now. We don't keep it in the house anymore, but the reason I drank it was for the caffeine, and I've switched over to coffee and tea now, and I'm trying to do less coffee and more, like, tea. But, yeah.
Yeah, I did that, too, earlier this year when I was pretty sick, and then I was also, I was pretty beat up because I had some neck issues. I had something going on with one of my vertebrae. I'm not exactly sure what was up. I ended up going to a chiropractor eventually that fixed me up by just one session with actually it was a chiropractor, acupuncturist, and a physical therapist. Yeah. I don't know. But our buddy Danilo, Danilo Cuellar, my friend and former co-host from the Seeds of Liberty, who himself is an acupuncturist, set me up with friends of his around here, and they actually fixed me up pretty well in just one session. It was nice. But during that time I started drinking reishi tea. And it almost completely replaced my coffee intake for a few months until I stopped making it and just haven't got around to it again. Yeah, I keep trying, man, but yeah, I find seltzer, the stuff is amazing. If you can find House New York Seltzer, you should try this stuff. It's the bomb, yo.
I have to keep an eye out for it.
Yeah. Try to bring some
after
with me.
This trip to the market.
Maybe we'll find some there. Yeah. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to present the 5th Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan, just outside of Kalamazoo, starting Thursday, June 22nd, and going through Monday, June 26th. That's right, Liberty Fest is getting longer and stronger. There will be presentations, discussions, bacon duels, and outdoor activities in an environment that is both family and grown-up friendly. There will be special appearances by Jeffrey Tucker, Dana Martin, and a few of the Freedom Fiends. If you have only talked about what a free society would look like, this is your chance to live it and see it with your own eyes. Now round up your friends and family and get them registered today at mplfest.org. And there is a discount for paying with Bitcoin. That's mplfest.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
That's all right. We could have let that one slip out on the air. I think I've already said it before. Too busy talking to D-Talk Radio.
And we're,
so
back.
We're back. Yeah. I think I'm done with my love affair with House New York Seltzer for the time being. Maybe we'll hop into a story or two. And this one I found interesting just because, well, the headline alone is just... so much you could do with just that headline alone. but this I found, I think this was an RT, Russia Today, you know, those horrible Russians. Yes, I read their propaganda. It's wonderful. They do a great job covering the U.S. So this headline is North Korea threatens to strike New York in response to 5-month-old Trump tweet. now this is something like you automatically go, is this the Onion like saying
no,
like
it's not what?
Exactly. Like my first, you know, your first thought is like, okay, is North Korea really that far behind the time that they're fight? Like, you know, maybe with like, it probably if it was an Onion, it'd be like a 5 year old Trump tweet, right? Because they're finally catching up to it. Whoa, did my thing just start making? Oh, bad radio host. I forgot to turn the volume down on my non Phoenix computer and a commercial just tried to start playing. Look at that. But this is a teaching hospital, so I will call myself out and chastise myself on the air so Michael doesn't have to do it later. Anyway, so yeah, so you know, all hail God Emperor Trump and his wonderful tweeting. He made a tweet back in January, like the day after New Year's, I think, actually. Yeah, it was January 2nd, when North Korea was announcing that they were going to be testing more of their developing nuclear weapons. And he, you know, of course, in typical Trump fashion, it ends in a very short statement. It won't happen, with a, you know, with an exclamation point. And apparently the North Korean government actually referenced this tweet when they started saying that they can, what as they put it? Yes. Where is, oh yes. The DPRK is about 10,400 kilometers away from New York, but this is just not a long distance for its strike today. Meaning that this was, you know, this was written in the North Korean papers as an opinion. So they're trying to threaten that they could actually make it. And the quote from them is actually it might be able to be proven in practice that they can actually hit New York. Now
allegedly.
Allegedly. Now, yes, we are talking about North Korea here, who hasn't been able to get anything past Japan, I don't think, as of yet.
Right. I think the article goes on to say they've only had like mid-range success off the coast of Japan.
Yeah, they're testing intercontinental missiles, and they haven't gotten anything past like the seas of Japan, like actually out into the Pacific, as far as I know. And you know, the joke about them, like anytime North Korea, well, before Trump actually, anytime North Korea ever got all uppity and started talking about stuff, the memes would roll out, and it would always be like, you know, Kim Jong, who is, oh, which one is in power now? I forget. Kim Jong Il, Sun, whichever one's in there. I always forget which order the names go in. No disrespect meant.
Kim Jong Un, I think.
There you like go. That. Thank you.
Yeah,
you know, him out there with like a cart with like a cardboard box, you know, and a whole bunch of people like standing behind him cheering, you know, because like that's the appearance that they give, that, you know, they really don't have anything. So the fact that they're now threatening to nuke New York, as a still unfortunate New Yorker, I'm not really scared. Maybe I should be. I don't know.
Well, that was in response to a tweet, was it not?
Well, yeah. Well, no. I mean, they've been testing and they've continued to test, but they referenced the tweet in particular when they announced this latest round of testing that they're doing, because they were claiming they were first claiming that they were testing their new missile systems. But they actually referenced this tweet from Trump, you know, basically saying, oh, it won't happen. Well, we may have to, you know, put this into practice and show you that we can do it, which, you know, is generally big talk from these guys that can be ignored, you know, as opposed to some of the other threats that the individuals who live and have to deal with the idiocy of the U.S.'s foreign policies that cause people to want to hurt us. you know, normally they're not much of a threat, but Trump, I don't know, man, he does love to agitate people. And, you know, obviously this was a few days. I mean, he was already president. He just hadn't been sworn in yet when he made this tweet, because he got sworn in like a couple weeks later. But he was technically the president at that point, and being very, you know, Trump-like. And I don't know, man, one of these days, I have a feeling that's not going to bode well for people like us.
Right. Well, if he causes a problem, we'll have to send Rodman over there to fix it.
Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists who think you need a government permission slip for everything? Everything you do is an A to B conversation, and the government should see their way out of it. Create true free markets by adopting the BIPCOT No Government License. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows use or modification of any product, service, or software except by governments or government agents. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Shane, hello.
And we're back. Hello, Jeremy.
Oh, you can hear me now.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Jeremy got droned over the break, but it seems that he's back now.
Actually, I droned myself. I thought I just blew out my microphone. That was the weirdest experience.
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that was freaky, man. I went to go move something on my desk, and all I did was tap the cable to my headphones. And there was this loud popping sound, and I'm like, oh no, this is not going to happen right now, because I have a backup set of headphones, but I do not have a backup microphone. So that would have been very bad for you.
Yeah. For a second there, I thought I was going to be tested, like you were in one of your first shows where you got kind of left hanging by yourself and had to carry the show.
So, yes. Yeah.
Thank you for not doing that.
Well, see, at least you had the opportunity. At least it happened during the break for you. That happened in mid-long segment for when I was with Lou. That was the very first show, I think. Yeah, the very first show I ever did. I wasn't even a Fiend officially yet. I was just doing a guest spot with Lou. Well, basically, it was my audition that I didn't know about.
Right.
But yeah, that
trial
was
trial by fire. Cool.
Exactly. So, but anyway, so I'm glad I could make it back. I mean, it would have been fun to listen to you, you know, try to pull this off by yourself. I'm sure you could do it. I have faith in you. Anyway, so now that I'm back, last segment we were talking about North Korea and the threat that I'm supposedly under right now, because those crazy North Koreans are threatening to nuke New York to get back at old Donald, because he likes to say very brash things. I mean, yeah, I don't think he was necessarily wrong about that when he said that's not going to happen, because, well, why would you think it's going to happen?
Right, they haven't given us enough reason to believe that it will.
Yeah. Although, you know, I mean, is that guy and that family pretty nutty? Yeah, because they, you know, forced their entire nation to live under this horrible, this horrible rule. But even still, it doesn't really help with the, you know, trade restrictions and like the sanctions and everything else that the U.S. does to countries that they don't like, that the, you know, they're not happy with the leaders, because that just makes life even more miserable. And you know what? I mean, he does have a kind of a point about why they should hate the West, although he makes it, you know, obviously everything is the West's fault. That's the way they describe it. Everything bad that happens to him, it's darn Americans, you know. But you know, to a certain extent, he has a point. Just like, you know, people can complain all they want about Pearl Harbor, but you know, FDR doing a lot of things to screw with the Japanese trade stuff beforehand, and you know, kind of pushing their buttons. Yeah, blowback's a thing.
Yep.
So
worms,
I mean, you know, but like I said, I'm not super, super afraid. But anyway, enough about the crazy people, halfway around the world, and the crazy person in Washington who I try to ignore as much as I try to ignore the crazy people in North Korea. I try to ignore the crazy guy in Washington, D.C. Another story I came across was actually, where were we going with this? Now I forgot. Schooling. This is a topic we've talked about plenty of times on the show before, about how, well, public school is bad for you folks. It'll rot your brain. You should probably avoid it. Get outside. You know, all the things they tell you about TV.
Yeah. Yeah.
Apply it to public school. Mm-hmm. Or just government school in general, because, well, even the quote unquote private ones, and a lot of the Catholic schools and stuff like that, they all still follow the same type of curriculums, and they still have to follow government regulations, and there's still certain things that have to be done in order to prove your worth to the state in order to get one of those fancy little pieces of paper that says, you know, you suffered through your 15,000 hours of being told what to do and having to ask to go to the bathroom, even as a pretty much an adult, still having to ask if it's okay to go pee, and all sorts of wonderful stuff like that. But this particular article struck me because, well, I usually like articles like this, but also I'm a big fan of FEE, the website it came from, the Foundation for Economic Education. They do a lot of great work over there. And this one is titled "How Schooling Crushes Creativity." And yes, it does. Because as it goes on to say, and like I said, we talked about it before, but it bears repeating. When you take children and place them in an environment where they are, you know, have to sit for the most part in tidy little rows, and be moved around by a bell, where, you know, bell rings, you need to pick up and either move to a different room or completely switch a subject or stay in the same room and switch a subject, you know, however it works in the school, the particular school you're at. But you don't get the opportunity to actually even get into anything, even if you find something in the school curriculum that interests you, that excites you, that you want to learn about. You're not given anywhere near enough time to actually get involved in it, because you're just here. You're in this room, or you're in this position for, you know, 45 to 50 minutes. Boom. Okay, bell rings. Now you move on to this next thing, and now you move on to this next thing. And they're cramming. They're just trying to cram all this worthless information into your head, to essentially beat you down and have you. You know, the most successful people that come out of there are the conformists. You know, those are the ones who survive that system the best, you know, because that's what they want. That's what the system's designed to do. That's mm-hmm. what when good old Horace Mann, that's who it was, right? Back in the 1830s, 40s, 50s, somewhere around there. I think he was the one that first brought it over, tried to start pushing the Prussian model. School system here in the U.S., which the Prussian model, the sole purpose of that was to churn out obedient citizens and good members of the military. Mm-hmm. That's what its design was to do. It's designed to basically break you and make you just one a part, you know, a cog in the machine, not an individual. It's designed to essentially strip you of your individuality and, you know, make you just conform. And it's a ones, you know, whether it's that one or the American adaptation, it's a one size fits all, you know, mm-hmm. essentially.
Yeah.
It has to, I mean, sure, there's AP classes and whatever, but it has to play down to the lowest common denominator.
Yeah.
So,
but all in all, you're just another brick in the wall.
Well, yes.
According to them.
Yeah. Well, that's what it is. You're just, you know, you're just, I mean, sure. I know there are teachers that work in these places that do care. I get it, you know, but I was raised by two of them. Although actually I think my dad cared less and less as time went on. But I can't really blame him because he started to figure out what was wrong with everything. But my mom tried. My mom was a teacher for 30, 40 years, maybe. Yeah. Over 40 years. And I know she tried. But even she had to give up at the end because she finally realized how horrible the system was and what it was doing to kids and how, and then, you know, and then on top of that, they dump Common Core on everybody. Oh, she's just like, that's it. She actually retired early after, you know, being at it. She had been at it since her early 20s, you know, ever since she got out of college.
Common Core would be the last straw.
Yeah. But, you know, so with doing all that, you know, it kills the drive to do things, and it also, you know, prevents you from possibly finding out what really interests you, because you're bogged down in all this worthless garbage that you don't have really, you know. And some schools, depending on where you are, the homework load is insane. And homework has been proven, as far as I've been able to come across, in study after study after study after study, homework actually does nothing to improve test scores or anything like or grades or knowledge of a particular subject. Like, homework is actually pretty much nothing but a time waster to prevent you from doing other things. And the you know, like I said, this article is centered around the Ken Robinson is a teacher, educator, and an author, and he gave a TED talk back in 2006 that's still the most viewed talk in TED's history, which is called "Do Schools Kill Kill Creativity?" And his premise. From the article here, his premise is simple. Our current education system strips young people of their natural creativity and curiosity by shaping them into a one-dimensional academic mold, playing to the lowest common denominator, as I was saying before. Sorry, my interjection. Back to the quote. This mold may work for some of us, particularly, as he states, if we want to become university professors. But for many of us, our innate abilities and sprouting passions are at best ignored and at worst destroyed by modern schooling. Here, I wholeheartedly agree.
I also agree.
Yeah.
I second that notion.
Yeah. I mean, I speaking from my own experience, I mean, like I said, I was raised by two public school educators. And I was always told that I was smart. You know, I have, you know, when I took the IQ, you know, when I was given the IQ test, you know, I scored like 130 or something. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm supposed to be pretty smart. But I was bored out of my mind for most of the time I was in school. Like, I got good grades, but I never had to study. Like, I could cram for a test the night before and remember everything and go in there and ace the exam. So I had like A's all through elementary school, middle school, and the beginning of high school. And then I just gave up because I was so just bored and agitated from being there and being trapped right. in this place.
You could pretty much wing it with B's and C's and still get by, you know? That's how I did my high school.
Yeah. Like, that's what I said. Like, by the time towards the end of ninth grade, I was like, really? Straight A's, pretty much straight A's for all these years. For what? What is this getting me? I'm like, I'm miserable. I knew on some level that I wasn't learning anything. I just couldn't place it back then. I just wanted to be out. But it does. It just saps you because you're just so, because the only outlet, at least for me in those places, like, you know, you could, if you want to play a sport, sure, great. But other than getting your hopes up unnecessarily because the chances of becoming a pro athlete are really, really slim, that's just a distraction, you know, more than anything. And then it's just like schoolwork, and not stuff that I wanted to do.
Yeah, so, that stuff is busy work at best and an exercise in obedience at worst.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, man. School will rot your brain.
Worms.
Never confuse schooling with an education either. We'll be back.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. Cell 411 because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at GetCell411.com. That's GetCell411.com.
Yeah, it kills everything. Kills your creativity. That was the article we were reading from, and I mean, I don't know, Shay. Like, I like you were starting to say, I think in the last, I mean, you I mean, you obviously agreed. Your experiences were not positive as well, I assume. Yeah.
I'd say by the time I got into about my sophomore year, you know, like you said, you got bored with high school, and I didn't feel, you know, challenged by the curriculum. They were just teaching us to obey and repeat. And so I started to feel like I was too cool for school, and I kind of started to rebel and hang with a different crowd. And I felt like if I could just wing it in my free time and not really have to study, I could just cram for the test the night before and wing it and get by with a B or a C, that should be good enough. So, yeah, I kind of dropped out and stopped really participating in my education probably about halfway through high school.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one. Yeah, it was definitely, I think, towards the end of my freshman year, I started to give up. And then by sophomore year, I was definitely mailing it in. And then I actually never, I don't think I made it past, because they totally, like, I passed my sophomore year here in Pennsylvania, and then moved up to New York and what should have been my junior year, because of the insane government regulations and the fact that New York is one of those schools that has the Regents program, so you have to have all these Regents tests to be able to be in the to get to the next level in like earth science and math and whatever else that they give you in history, I guess. And because I didn't have any of those for any year, because I think they start them in the eighth grade, I was told that the only way I would be able to start my junior year, now mind you, again, this is somebody who had gotten straight A's up until his freshman year and only slightly slacked off in my sophomore year down to like I got a B or two because I just really stopped caring. But my entire high school career, I went to like a legit high school, one of the biggest ones in the area that I grew up in. You know, I was told because I didn't have these things, if I wanted to continue in anything other than like remedial classes to get into my junior year, I was going to basically have to take the 8th, 9th, and 10th grade Regents for all of these classes during my first summer in New York.
Wow.
Before the school year started. And I was like, yeah, that's not happening.
I don't even know if that's possible.
I probably, because I'm one of those people who's really good at standardized tests. Yeah. So I probably could have been fine with it. But I'm like, there's no way I'm doing that during my first summer. Like, I'm here for this. Like, I just got here. No, that's not how I'm spending the summer here. You know, cramming for and taking, like, I think there was at least four for each year, like three or four. So there was 9 to 12 tests they wanted me to take in the course of a couple of months. And I was like, no. So I got pushed back to the 10th. Like, I basically had to repeat my sophomore year.
Oh, wow.
Even though, again, I had like a ridiculously high GPA my entire school career. So within like a week or two, I'm like, this is insane. There's no, like, I'm done. And I just stopped going to school. And like, the truancy officer would show up at my house regularly. In a weird twist, when the original guy who used to come, who did not like me at all, finally retired and gave it over to his assistant, and it was a woman who kept showing up. Years later, that assistant's daughter and I became really good friends, and it was just really weird whenever I would go to her house. It's like, hey, Mrs. Augustinson, nice seeing you on this side of things, because she used to come into my house, and my grandmother would let her in, and she would walk into my room, and I used to have, you know, way back when I had bunk beds, but at this point, I had gotten rid of the bottom bunk, so it was just the top bunk, but that's where I slept. And she would just walk into my room and like be at eye level with me, because I would roll over and then there she would be just staring at the edge of my bed, because, you know, I was on the top bunk.
Wow.
And it would just be like, hey, Mrs. Augustus, you coming in today, Jeremy? Not happening. You sure you want to do this? Absolutely. All right, I'll see you tomorrow.
You juvenile delinquent.
Yeah. But yeah, I gave up, because it was just like, this is insane. Like, I worked my butt off all this time for what? Yeah. And years later, I was proven right. It's a worthless institution. All right.
We'll be back for this trip to the moon.
Yeah. Probably got some better schools there, too.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
And go on the sidebar of the Freedom Fiend site. We now have Amazon links for Amazon US, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada due to popular demand. Worms.
Broadcasting from Libertarian Re-Education Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Manhattan Pizza Plaza, on the artificial satellite LitPair 2017, in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by BIPCOT, no government license. This allows for use by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
With an exception for the mailman.
Exceptions are optional. So we are back. We are the Freedom Fiends. This is the second hour. I am Jeremy. I am joined by Shane. What's going on, Shane?
Just chilling, having a great time on the Fiends.
Excellent. And of course, since this is the second hour, I would like to take this opportunity to say hello, Belfouche. And Sundance, of course. I'm sorry, not that I think any less of you, Sundance, but you're not as much fun to say as Belfouche. So welcome to our second hour, listeners. How are you doing? Thanks for joining us this evening. So in the first hour, we talked about North Korea threatening to blow up my backyard with these nuclear weapons they supposedly now have. How horrible school is and how it rots your brain, and my new fascination with seltzer water, which may have been the most important topic we covered in the first hour. So if you missed any of that, check it out on the podcast and be here next time, darn it. Or for you people in fine people in Belfouche, harass your radio station and ask them to put the second hour of the Fiends on.
Or the first hour.
The first hour, that's right. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Exactly. Anyway, so I found, actually, this is I had an article I wanted to talk about that I wanted to tie into something else. And this actually came from a buddy of mine. My buddy John actually sent this to me earlier today in a group chat we have on Telegram with the heading, he used my tag name whatever my name is there on Telegram, but basically saying this is for Jeremy specifically because I know how much he loves the parasites, which of course is a reference to some issues I had a couple of months ago dealing with government workers and their love for their welfare checks. So this story is actually close to home for him too because he's up in this neck of the woods. But the headline to this was Maine Forest Service decides only burn permits issued online by the state are valid. Now, just by the title alone, you may say, oh, well, you know, people are creating fake permits. Well, obviously, we can't have that type of stuff. But no, that's not the case at all. What this actually is doing is there had actually been two private companies that have been also dispensing burn permits with the knowledge of the Forest Service and the local fire departments and the local Congress, or the state Congress. They had all been aware for years, because I think one of them started in 2012, the other one started in 2013. They had been aware this entire time that these private companies had been there providing this service. Now, of course, right off the bat, needing a permit for anything from the government, that's a red flag for me. I don't know about you, Shane. I don't know how you feel about that. I'm pretty anti-permit.
Yeah. I'm against the idea of licensing altogether.
Yeah. I mean, now, in this particular instance, now, I understand if there's, if you have an issue with people lighting fires and not tending to them and letting things get completely out of hand. People regularly burning half the town down. Like, okay, I get it, you know, especially if you live places that gets, you know, a very dry climate at certain, you know, at any time of the year that leads to, increased chances of these things. But when you live in a world that these things already exist, government's here right now, unfortunately, things like these permits are here right now, unfortunately, having these things is one thing, but preventing private companies from also being able to provide a service, which their specific goal was to make things easier for all the local fire departments.
Allegedly.
Yeah. This is what these companies, you know, obviously, you know, everybody, most companies are trying to make some kind of profit. But it was really helping because there's a number of local firefighters, that are quoted throughout this article saying how much these systems had been helping them. And, you know, the fact that without these companies being allowed to offer this service, there's only a couple of ways that you can get these permits if you need them. And most of the ways are going into your local fire department and, you know, getting one directly from them, which most of the firefighters said, unfortunately, as much as we want to be able to be there to hand these out to people, most people tend to show up during the day when we're not there because we're all volunteers and we're at our regular jobs. So people show up during the day to get these permits. We're not here to give it to them. So they were able to turn online. Now, there is still a way to get it online, apparently, of course. There's a way to get a state-approved permit online, but it'll cost you $7. Which is, I think, more than these private companies were charging. because supposedly if you just walk into because somebody raised the issue of, oh, this is just revenue generation. And there was somebody in the article, one of the proponents of the whole system changing, was saying that, you know, oh, no, that's not really the case at all. This isn't about money, because if you did walk-ins to get it to the local fire departments, which again, if you're talking about rural Maine, local doesn't exactly mean local as you may know it, depending on where you live.
Oh, exactly.
But getting a walk-in, you could get it for free. But if you did it online, which most people these days will opt to do things like that for convenience, there's a $7 charge. You can still get that one through the state, but these other companies were offering it. And like I said, there are a number of firefighters, including fire chiefs from these different volunteer fire departments, were saying these private companies were really helping us out because it was making life so much easier. And they found a correlation. And I think they were even said it wasn't necessarily the cause. So they were quick to say it's not causation, but they found a correlation between these two private companies starting up and offering this type of service along with other things that they did to provide these permits. Again, with the knowledge of the Forest Service, you know, and people, everybody knew they existed and knew what they were doing and were like, okay, just do what you got to do. Didn't say anything to them. Just let them go for a few years now. But then all of a sudden up and decided to change it. But they were saying that it not only was helping the firefighters out because they didn't have to have somebody at the firehouse at all times to be able to do this, to provide this service for them. They were also noticed during that exact same time frame from when these companies started, they noticed a drop in what they call illegal fires, which, you know, fire without a permit. So it's like, And not only just illegal fires, but damage from illegal fires, like, you know, property damage, like everything was dropping in court. Like, you know, again, correlation, not necessarily causation, but, you know, pretty decent statistics to point to and be like, hey, you know, possibly could this be part of the reason, you know? So, like I said, my buddy said this to me earlier to kind of rile me up and, like, you know, poke fun at me. But it's just like, you know, it's indicative of, to me, what government is all about, you know, control and forcing monopolies. You know, either picking and choosing the winners of, like, the bigger corporations that are in bed with them, that get, you know, the ones that get the very favorable regulations and all that type of stuff, to just the fact that they hate competition for their services, especially the ones that supposedly only government can provide. Those type of things, of course, they really hate to relinquish power to, any type of government does. So killing competition is one of government's number one goals, I would say. And this, of course, you know, so, like, reading this, like, automatically, like, I go to my hatred of permits, my hatreds of, you know, permits and licensors and all that stuff from government. Because, again, I understand the need for, if you're going to have burn permits or something, like, at least somebody keeping an eye on what's going on, even in a free society, you know, because, again, like, plenty of us have talked about before. I talk about it all the time. You know, I don't expect too much to change in a free society because I still want a lot of the services, even some of the ones government claims that only it can provide. A lot of those I'd still like. I just like to pay for them voluntarily. That's all.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I'd like to have choices, you know, like the people of Maine did up until a day or two ago when the government was just like, nope, sorry. And of course, you know, the government's claim is, oh, we're going to help streamline things. Yeah, that never, historically, that never seems to work out. But this whole thing got me thinking, like I said, right away to my hatred of licenses and permits and stuff like that. But then my next thought was to that whole thing about government hating competition. And it reminded me of a story that I'm sure we've talked about here on The Fiends before. But again, it's one of those ones that's timeless and bears repeating. And that is the story of Lysander Spooner and the good old American Letter Mail. Was it the Letter Mail or the Mail Letter Company, right?
Yeah. The American Letter Mail Company.
Yes, thank you. Yes. Back in, what was it, the 1850s? It was before this. It was pre-Civil War that he did this, right? See, now I'm forgetting the dates about it. But yeah, so way back when, good old Lysander Spooner, who among other things, wrote in my opinion, the greatest evisceration of the Constitution I've ever come across, the Constitution of the United States of the USSA. He wrote the greatest evisceration of that. No treason, the Constitution of no authority. It's actually a multiple part essay, which I think some of the parts have been lost over time. I think I've only ever been able to see four of them, maybe three or four of them. Anyway, amazing, amazing read. Gifted writer. We're going to have to talk more about him after the break. But suffice it to say that he took on the government and won for a little while and outdid them. And then that can't happen. So I had to try to put a stop to it.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agrist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. And some people will try dirty tricks to silence your voice. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, you cannot tolerate any skullduggery. So go with agoristhosting.com. Have a WordPress or blog site, but you're not satisfied with performance or uptime? Or just want raw hosting? Want to pay with Bitcoin? Agorist Hosting specializes in high-performance hosting with personalized service. Go to agristhosting.com and click on the button that says Get Hosted. That's agoristhosting.com.
We left. I was starting to talk about good old Lysander Spooner and him taking on the United States Postal Service, which I don't even think was the U.S. It wasn't the USPS back then, but it was, you know, it was the post, you know, the post office, essentially. And it was I finally found the darn date. It was back in the mid 1840s when this all started, because way back then the price of a stamp was 18¾ cents, which obviously today doesn't sound like much, but back then that was a lot more money. And this was essentially, that was just to go from New York to Boston. And then it was 25 cents if you wanted to go from New York to D.C. And then from Boston to... then a letter sent from Boston to Albany, New York, which is only a couple hour drive, maybe 3 hours tops, I think. Yeah, 3 hours maybe. Written on a 1/4 ounce sheet of paper and carried by the Western Railroad, cost 2/3 as much as the freight charge for carrying a barrel of flour the same distance.
Wow.
So it was just as much money to ship a barrel of flour as it was a 1/4 ounce sheet of paper.
That sounds like an inefficiency in their system somewhere.
Yes, exactly. You know, and Spooner, he went to study, because Lysander Spooner, for those who don't know, like I said, he was back in the 18th century. He was an abolitionist. He was a self-taught lawyer. He never went to law school, never passed a bar or anything, but studied enough that he could run circles around most schooled, you know, most learned lawyers. He wrote one of the most most powerful eviscerations of the Constitution I've ever read, the Constitution of No Authority, and great writer, and so many other things. And he, you know, bunch of other business ventures. So back then he started studying back in the mid 1840s, he started studying this and seeing how much it was costing to do all these things. And his summation of the entire study that he did was that it was high cost and no service. Where have we heard that before? Pretty much everything government does, right? So people were trying different ways to obviously get around these rates, because, you know, like I said, back then, 25 cents, that was a lot more money than it is today. So, and people who kept doing this, Spooner would cheer them on, but he realized they were fighting a losing battle, so he decided to just go into straight up competition with the U.S. government, because as a self-taught lawyer, he was able to read read the Constitution, read different legal documents, read different precedents and all that stuff, and look into this. And what he found was, it does indeed say that I think it actually says in the Constitution they're supposed to provide for the mail. It doesn't, however, and it actually uses loophole in the one article that I dug up to refresh my memory on some of the stuff, but it was technically a loophole. it doesn't say anywhere that there can't be any competition yet. More on that later. But so he went ahead and he started, not only did he start his own postal service, but just to rub it in their faces a little bit, he called it the American Letter Mail Company. And he immediately went out and started undercutting the post office. And they offered to deliver letters with no limit on the weight at lower rates than the post office was offering. And he ran ads in the front page of the New York Daily Tribune, which was one of the biggest papers back then, with following information. And this is from the article, American Post Office. The American Letter Mail Company has established post offices in New York, Philadelphia, Baltimore, and Boston, and will deliver letter daily from each to the others twice a day between New York and Philadelphia. Postage, 6¼ cents, you know, payable in advance always. Stamps, 20 for a dollar. Their purpose is to carry letters by the most rapid conveyance and at the cheapest rates, and to extend their operations as far as patronage would justify over the principal routes of the country, so as to give the public the most extensive facilities for correspondence that could be afforded at a uniform rate. Ah, a thing of beauty. So that was the beginning of good old Lysander Spooner taking on the U.S. Postal Service. More on that when we get back from this trip to the market.
Worms. You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Hi there. This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. Purse.io is a great website where you can spend Bitcoin on Amazon or trade Amazon gift cards for Bitcoin. I use Purse myself and I love it. You can also get discounts on Amazon. You can get 5% right this minute, or if you place your order and wait a day or so, you can name your discount and get 10%, 20%, even up to 33% off. You can try Purse right now and get 0.01 Bitcoin free after you complete your first order over $50. And if you go through the Freedom Fiends link, Purse will also send 0.01 Bitcoin to the Freedom Fiends. Help yourself to some agorism and help Liberty Media while you're at it. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Purse link, even if you've used Purse before. Or enter the referral code FIENDS when you sign up at purse.io. That's FIENDS. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra. Do it!
Talking about Lysander Spooner taking on the U.S. Postal Service and winning for a time until government said, that's enough of that, young man, and we're not going to play this game anymore. So last we left off, I was reading one of the advertisements he ran in one of the bigger New York papers of the time. Talking about how cheap the rates were, and like I said, right away undercutting them all by a ton, because his 6¼ was right away 12-13¼ cents cheaper than what the post office was charging for their cheapest rates. So right off the bat, he was just knocking them out of the park. And of course, it's not that difficult even for people that aren't very astute when it comes to economics to look at that and go, well, of course that's a better deal, but how is he able to do that? And if he's able to do that, is the government overcharging us? could that be? So they obviously, the public loved this because they were getting their letters and stuff, and everything they wanted to send through the mail was getting places cheaper and quicker. So it wasn't just they were getting a deal, not that somebody was willing to charge less. It was also actually a better service. And this, of course, angered Congress and the Postal Department. And, this one line, I love it. How dare he openly flout the Constitution? It's like, no, he didn't flout the Constitution. All it says is that you're going to provide it. It doesn't say he can't provide it, too.
Oh, yeah. The Constitution only says the Congress has to provide a postal department, but it doesn't say that private citizens also can't do that.
Yeah, exactly. So they had no intention to sit for any of Spooner shenanigans, and they spent... They literally pored over this for like days, nights, like all night long, trying to figure out what they could do. So they just started bringing lawsuits against Lysander Spooner, the government itself, and the postal service, you know, filing suits against them left and right in hopes of giving that in hopes that it would bury him, you know, and obviously get him to go away. And then they even threatened the heads of the railroads that they would no longer be utilizing their particular service to help transport their mail if they found out that they were also carrying mail for Spooner's company, which I doesn't that that's like government controlling the businesses.
It almost sounds kind of like a monopoly.
Yeah, where have I heard that before? I don't know. I don't know. Sounds like it could be familiar, but anyway, back to the story. So they not only are they threatening, you know, they trying to scare him by just pounding him with lawsuits, but they're also they're threatening the what's going to, you know, the people that were helping him, because they were like, fine, you know, well, if you're going to pay us too, we don't care, we'll carry your stuff for you, whatever. We're already carrying their stuff, basically. So they did all these things, and So basically, the government thought they had won, and they actually did get him. One of his agents was found guilty and fined for transporting letters on a railroad car after they started threatening the railroad company owners. So they managed to nail one of the people working for him, and so that was kind of a win. You know, the government thought they had won, but next time around. That the judge in the case actually advised the jury the jury under owner of conveyances was not liable under the law if, unknown to the owners, a letter carrier brought mail aboard a train or steamboat. The not guilty verdict was sustained by the U.S. Circuit Court, which expressed doubt that the U.S. had the right to monopolize the transportation of mail. Again, which was essentially saying that Spooner was right about the supposed loophole they claimed he was using. No, he just read the plain language of the document, and it says we can do this. It doesn't say you can't.
Right. And according to constitutional scholars, you know, there's a loose and a strict interpretation of the Constitution. And according to the loose interpretation, we can do anything that it does not expressly prohibit, like start our own letter company.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I remember that stuff from my days as a constitutionalist when I used to carry that stupid pocket thing around with me everywhere. But that is the, you know, the originalist, you know, the original intent people. That's that, like, you know, that's basically what that whole thing's supposed to be. That's what it would, you know, that's there's stuff written in the, you know, from some of the fondling fathers from back then stating that. You know, if it's not expressly in there, then it's, you know, obviously people like Hamilton and stuff wanted to cram things in there, even if it wasn't, and didn't think that mattered. But there were some of them that were saying, no, this is the way it was supposed to be. So, you know, even multiple courts at the time were saying that Spooner was right about this. So, of course, this did not make the post office happy. So they continued to push. And they continued to try to follow suits, and then the postmaster just was like, you know what, I'm just going to go straight to Congress. So like he went and pled to the Congress to do things. So first he went and said, listen, you have to do something. If we can't get rid of him, you have to lower the rates. Because supposedly, I guess it needed an act of Congress to change the rates. So they finally decided to lower the rates to combat him, and they laid it. They went down all the way to 5 cents. To, you know, and this is a huge drop for them because they were getting, you know, 18, almost 19 cents before this. Now, you know, per piece of mail. Now they were they were dropping all the way down to 5 cents to get, you know, because he was doing 6 1/4. And then he turned around and Spooner turned around and was like, okay, I'll do 4. So this angered them, you know, of course. So a couple of years later, they were like, well, he's still beating us. So they did, they lowered it again. This time they actually, they enact, and not only did they lower the rates again, but they simultaneously enacted a law to protect the government's monopoly. So now they made a law that said nobody can essentially said no one can compete with the government in this area. Not only does it say in the Constitution that they will provide for it, we're the only ones who are allowed to provide for it. So, they finally ended up shutting him down. However, what came out of that was they lowered it again right before they passed that law, and because they were trying to beat him out again, they dropped it down to 3 cents. And that's actually where the 3 cent stamp came from, which I don't know if you know the whole story behind that, Shane. But that was part of the thing. One of the things I stumbled across when I went down the sovereign citizen route years ago, or at least toyed with that whole idea.
Mm. I wasn't familiar with that particular aspect of Spooner, at least not to begin with.
Yeah, well, I wasn't, you know, when I tried this back then, I had no idea that he was the reason that the 3 cent stamp actually existed. But one of the supposed proofs of that type of thinking is things that you're able to do if you know basically the proper magic words, or you know the different tricks, that you can get away, you can do things that were supposed to, the way things were supposed to be done back then, you can still do now. It's just you have to know how to, you know, basically these are the type of people who think that everything was fine and dandy until Lincoln and the not so civil war, and then
Reconstruction.
I was thinking reclamation. I'm like, that's not right. Reconstruction. They destroy. You know, then the amendments and all that stuff. He destroyed it after that. But before that, if you can go back to before that time, and one of those things that's supposedly a proof is, you can actually still send a piece of mail for 3 cents anywhere in the United States.
Oh.
Well, that's not true. Not anywhere, but you can send it to any state. And any local post office, not necessarily people's houses. And I actually did test this theory out, and it worked. I was able to send the letters. I think my dad and I sent them back and forth to each other. I was able to send a letter to my dad, and he was able to accept it by placing a 3 cent stamp. And I went in and specifically asked for 3 cent stamps, and they actually had some. And the guy was kind of looking at me funny. So I don't know if he had dealt with sovereign citizens before, or he was honestly curious, but he was kind of like,
probably had to add you to a list or something.
Yeah. He was kind of like, what do you need these for? I'm like, it's just an experiment I want to try. And he's like, oh, all right. But I purchased them and I sent it to him. And the whole thing with that is you're supposed to be able to send it, if you send it to the person's address, like their street address, it will go to their local post office, but it won't actually get sent to them, but they'll hold it there. And it's considered, cause it's not going to get returned to you for insufficient postage.
Right.
But you write their address out, but then when you write the state, you write the state out in full. You don't abbreviate it, because that's, you know, part of the horrible thing they did with the government, that's the whole sovereign citizen thing, just like everything in capital letters. It's like, well, when they abbreviate it, that means it's not really the actual state. So you write the state out and don't put the zip code on, which again is normally a no-no. Normally, if you forget the zip code, it'll get kicked back to you. At least around here, if I forget to write a zip code, they almost always kick it back to me just to be a pain in the butt, because they like to make the claim that these numbers are important. Well, no, again, you write this state out and no zip code, and a 3 cent stamp, and it gets there no problem.
Now, that 3 cent stamp, does that only cover up to a certain weight before you have to get another 3 cent stamp?
But it's anything that you would be able to send with whatever the weight is for regular mail, that, because there is a weight limit on that. Was it 13 ounces, maybe? Whatever it is, there is a weight that you have to put more than just even the forever stamps they have now. So whatever that is, it's the same thing, but you can send three cents. It's interesting. But thank you, Spooner.
Experiment.
Thank you. Even though you lost, you still won. Thank you for your service.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
When the final element of Shreese, it's not good on you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on Jeep,
and Bitcoin, 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 Bitcoin.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says,
Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If a real true fiend, they gotta collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If a real true fiend, they gotta collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If a real true fiend, they gotta collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If a real true fiend, they gotta collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If a real true fiend, they gotta collect them all.
Meow. And we're back. So, there was an article that we were going to talk about, and this is probably also related to redemption.
Yeah.
So, this is
closest thing. Sorry, I was just going to say, closest thing I could find in Redemption in the third act. I'm horrible with finding that stuff. I always usually find the doom and gloom stuff, so this is the closest thing I could find, folks.
This was on DailyMail.com in the science and tech section. The headline says, The 100 Mile High Club. Scientists call for urgent studies into sex in space and say babies born on other planets could be vastly different. So anyway, the article goes on to say that space agencies around the world are working to develop technology that could bring humans further than ever before, with hopes to one day establish colonies on the moon or even Mars. But if long-term settlement is the goal, experts say that one thing we just can't forget about is sex. During a recent panel discussion, a George Washington University assistant professor explained that human reproduction is a crucial issue that we have to address, yet so far remains poorly understood by some, maybe.
Well, I think he was talking about their, you know, his field in particular, which is funny. I actually heard a... I can't remember what podcast I was listening to. I want to say it was a Joe Rogan podcast, but that may not be right. I was listening to a podcast recently where they were actually talking about this whole thing and the fact that, you know, nobody really knows because nobody's actually had sex in space.
Well, we don't know if that's actually true, do we?
As far as you can trust the reporting from all the cosmonauts, it's people have reported that nobody's ever done it. And there was this whole thing I remember listening to, and then reading something else on it too, about all these different, supposedly somebody put out a study, about all these different, They looked really official about, like, they had actually tested, because they're like, well, what if you're in a spacecraft and you don't have, it's not, you know, you're in kind of the zero gravity situation. Like, how does that work?
Right.
You know, and they went through this whole thing about all these different positions they tried, usually involving being tied together in some fashion so you don't float away. But that turned out to be a hoax. But what came out of that conversation is like, yeah, nobody really knows, because if former astronauts have done anything, nobody's talked about it openly. Because nobody knows.
Right. And it's not like they're kissing and telling about any of that stuff.
Well, yeah. But, you know, like they're talking about in this article about going even further than just, you know, going into space, but like actually trying to colonize these different planets. Like, yeah, with the different types of pressures in the atmospheres, even if you try to, make it as close to Earth as possible, like whatever you have to do, whether it's some type of domes or whatever, in order to make the atmosphere more Earth-like, it's still not going to be the same. And, you know, who knows what that could do to the human body, you know?
Right.
It's an interesting thing to think about. I mean, you know, it may sound kind of goofy, but like I'm all about getting out into outer space and wanting to see private industries, you know, going back to our earlier conversation about government hating competition, but seeing private industries get out there and, you know, like I know Elon Musk talks about it a bunch and other people have too, but colonizing different planets. Heck yeah, man. Let's get off this rock and see what else is going on. You know, I'm all for that, but there, you know, this article's right. It's a very important topic that I don't think most people have really even considered. Because you look, why would you? You know, it's just like, oh yeah, space, yay. You know, kind of forget about the fact that, well, yeah, if you're going to move into space, now what?
Well, not only does space travel subject the DNA to, you know, radiation, but then the different environments that, you know, something could develop in would cause it to develop in different ways. The article cites a few different examples, but I mean, you can imagine how zero G and various things can affect the development of a, you know, a fetus.
Exactly. You know, because beyond the whole sex for fun thing, it's like, yeah, if we're talking about moving into space, colonizing different planets, it's like, it's just going to be you guys, or are you going to try to reproduce to continue the whole line so more people can try to experience living like this? Like, yeah, you may want to take these things into consideration. Although I will say that, you know, once the studies get started, where do you sign up, man? Because I might be interested.
Yeah, sign me up for that.
I would definitely like to throw my hat in the ring. Well, for my services, as it were. Well, this has been a lot of fun, Shane. It's good talking to you. Thank you for coming on. Thanks for everybody listening. More of us at freedomfeeds.com.